This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigobine. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Naz, good morning. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
And good morning to Lou, too.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Lou Franceschetti, joining us again. Lou, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm great today. Are you guys?
We're fantastic. Thank you. It's a beautiful day outside. Actually tried to get a tee-off time this morning, and there are a couple of courses open the weekend, but it's been an incredibly difficult time getting tee times this particular year, so we'll have to find some other pursuits for today with do some work outside somewhere. Anyways, gentlemen, just to let our listeners know what's coming up on the show. Just after the first break, we'll be talking to the former Toronto Maple Leaf and co-host of First Up on TSN, Carlo Colaiacovo, a friend of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. And we're catching up with John Amendola, sports card impresario. He's going to bring us up to speed on the sporting card world. He's got this great new business venture, Mintink. New sponsor to the show. It's the business opportunity is going gangbusters. He's thriving. It's a great year to be in sports card collecting, and we'll chat with him later on in the hour. Guys, there are moments when you have to pause and you think, and then you look back on a remarkable career. Naz, you and I have done tribute shows on the air over the course of the last 6 years, Johnny Bauer, Jean Béliveau, Gordie Howe, Muhammad Ali. It's not going to be a tribute show to Diego Maradona, but I do want to pay tribute. We'd be remiss if we didn't. He is one of the giants of the sporting world in the 20th century at the very, very, very top. Unquestionably, a flawed human being in some ways, battled substance abuse, battled certain demons. But when he was on a soccer pitch, you were watching a genius. You were watching a Mozart. You were watching someone who was born to be a soccer player. He was absolutely, absolutely a joy to watch, born to be a soccer player, a national hero in Argentina. The country is mourning him. Led Napoli in Serie A to a couple of titles in the late 80s. Hero in Italy as well in many ways. Gentlemen, Diego Maradona was voted by FIFA the greatest soccer player of the 20th century. It was 1A and 1B, him and Pelé. When you think of the greats of our youth in various sports, Maradona, in a way that perhaps we don't even understand in North America. Around the world, he was a god when he played soccer, although not necessarily in England, and we can chat about that. But I'll take the opportunity now to turn it over to you guys. Your thoughts on, I played quite a bit of soccer when I was younger, and he's one of the greatest athletes ever, ever in any sport. Naz, your thoughts.
Wally, after seeing the clips of him, he runs faster with the ball than without. He's incredible. Absolutely incredible. What a great soccer player he was. Can't believe he's only 60 years old. That's sad to hear. But a very good soccer player. That's
Lou,
around, I think.
Lou, your thoughts?
Well, you know what? It's watching or growing up watching Maradona play against the Italians and the rest of the world, I would definitely put him in the top probably five in the world. Obviously, there were some soccer players out there that we didn't get a chance to see. I knew he was one gentleman or one person that can pretty much own the country of Argentina. But it just goes to show to everybody that he was human. The stuff that went on off the so-called soccer pitch, he wasn't above everybody else. He wanted to live his life. And sometimes when you do that, you get into trouble. And that's the only way I can express my condolences, that he was a human being and he made a lot of mistakes. He just wanted to go out and live the life that he wanted to.
Yeah, too many mistakes, but, you know, who are we to judge? I'm not in the judgment business. So, we would have hoped that he would have, lived gracefully to a longer age. But Maradona's Maradona. Interesting story about Diego that I completely and utterly forgot about. And I was doing a little bit of reading about him last night and watched one of the specials documentaries on him. And it came to light. There was an article written, interestingly enough, on September 14th of this year in the Athletic by a writer by the, I'll give him credit, Pablo Mauer. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his name. I'm not sure. I've never seen the name before, so I'm not so sure he's a Canadian writer. But it was a very lengthy, detailed, and very great article about a game that Diego Maradona played for Toronto Italia in the National Soccer League. I'd completely forgotten about this. It sort of jogged my memory. On September 2nd, 1996, there was a gentleman that was very familiar to all of us who played in minor soccer in the 70s and 80s and 90s in the Toronto area. His name was Pat from Milford Auto Body, Pasquale Fiocola, who brought him in. He was the owner of Toronto Italia at the time. Brought him in because Diego Maradona's brother had played for Toronto Italia. Lalo Maradona had played for Toronto Italia, and Pat at Milford asked him if we could get Diego to come to Toronto. He actually played a game in Toronto on September 2nd, 1996, at Birchmount Stadium of all places. It was Toronto Italia against the National Soccer League All Stars. And the place was, and there's an actual video on the internet, a 12-minute video taken of Maradona in the dressing room with the Toronto Italian players, Maradona out on the field. The crowd absolutely mobbed him. He scored a goal on a corner kick. He got subbed out right at the end of the game. The boss's son went in to Louis went in, and he was absolutely and utterly mobbed by the fans. It was just Argentinian flags and Toronto and Italian flags the entire game. It was standing room only. People were selling tickets for four times what they were worth at Birchmount Stadium. A long forgotten piece of trivia, Diego Maradona actually played a game in Toronto. Obviously, he wasn't his 1996. He had gone through all of his troubles. He wasn't the player. He was overweight at the time. But you watch some of the highlights of that video, and you're looking at a guy, the absolute, he knew how to, once the ball got on his foot, it was like on a string. Diego Maradona, of course, will be remembered for probably 5 minutes of soccer more than anything else. It was 1986, the World Cup against England. Who can forget it? The infamous hand of God. Of course, they didn't have video replay in those days. Goal that should not have counted. And 5 minutes later in Mexico, Azteca Stadium, he dribbles through the entire English team and scores the goal of all goals ever in soccer. At a most critical time in the World Cup, probably never to be repeated, but he will always be remembered for those 5 minutes. And, of course, the two Serie A titles in Italy made him a hero in Italy as well. Guys, we've got to go to break really quickly. Last thoughts, and then we'll wrap it up, and we'll get back with Carlo Colaiacovo. Naz?
Yeah.
Last thoughts before we go to break?
Okay. The two old guys boxing last night. Let me talk about that.
Okay. Maybe we'll get a chance to we'll start that one off with Goliakovo and of course talking about Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. We'll be right back. Carlo Goliakovo, the co-host of First Up on TSN, right after the break.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised we all have things we should cut back on. For me half-brother Raoul, that's ordering inflatable toys. For others, it's carbs. So Pizzaville made the extra thin crust pizza. You get the same authentic Italian taste as our regular pizza, but with two-thirds less carbs. Because the last thing Raoul wants is an inflatable waist.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on the new AM 740 on downtown Toronto, FM 96.7. Live streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, former Toronto Maple Leaf, co-host of TSN's First Up, Monday to Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. in the morning. Of course, I'm talking about Carlo Goliakovo. Good morning, Carlo. How are you? Good
morning, boys. Happy Sunday. I am doing great. Excited for my normal every Sunday when NFL's on. So should be a fun one.
Carlo, we're going to have a wide-ranging conversation with you today. I don't know if
Love it.
We told you, but we got Leapin' Lou Franceschetti on the line with us today. So
what's up, Louie?
Hey, Carlo. Go Bama.
Go Bama.
before we get into it, Carlo, I just want your thoughts. We just had a wide, rambling conversation about Diego Maradona. Are you a big fan of his?
I mean, my dad was more than I was. Obviously, growing up in an Italian family, I followed, you know, the Azzurri and Italy and stuff, and was always reminded about the legend that Diego Maradona was. I mean, how he put the country of Argentina on the map with his soccer brilliance and his display of skills and iconic goals. He'll always be remembered in the soccer world, and it's just really, really sad to see that 2020 has taken another legend away from us.
Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
What did you think of the fight last night between Jones and Tyson?
Well, to be honest with you, I was more excited to see the fight before it with Jake Paul and Nate Robertson. It's unfortunate the way that ended, but it goes to show you that boxing is more of a lifestyle than a sport. And I think the guys touched on it really well last night that, you know, credit to Nate Robertson and the incredible athlete that he is, but to jump in a ring with a guy that, you know,
boxes for a living and trains for a living, you really feel sorry, and ultimately that was the end result. Tyson and Roy Jones, you know, I thought in the beginning it really gave us a chance to see some fireworks. So that Tyson came out and, you know, was moving around, was throwing like a young Tyson. But as the match went on, you kind of saw that both guys were starting to fatigue a little bit. And I think it was more of sportsmanship, you know, the later the they got into the rounds. But ultimately, you know, I don't think it had the same hype without the fans in the stands, because you would imagine, you know, even just with the entrances, I kind of liked what Mike Tyson did with his song, the entrance. He made it about himself, which was hilarious. But ultimately, you know, controversial with the way that it ended in a draw. You know, there was a lot of people, especially in Vegas. Well, Vegas was happy about it because they won both ways. But a lot of people were kind of, disappointed in the fact that they went that route to give it a draw. But ultimately, you understand why. These are two guys at age 50 that took a chance and took a risk and, you know, ultimately ended up trying to entertain us. And I thought for the most part, they did a pretty good job.
I've got a different take on it, Carl, and I'll turn it over to you, Lou. I'm not, you know, I appreciate the fact Tyson is a controversial character, and mm-hmm. you know, he's really a, for lack of a better term, I mean, he's got the eye of the tiger in the ring. I'm not so sure gaming commission should be licensing 54-year-olds and 51-year-olds for heavyweight boxing matches.
And it's
entertainment value, I get it.
Yeah.
But these guys have taken a lot of blows to the head. The way we're sensitive about brain injuries nowadays,
yeah.
I know that they're fully consenting adults. I get that part of it. But gaming, the athletic commissions in the States, you know, they have functions. They're not supposed to let guys in the ring that that could injure themselves. And you'd have a tough time convincing me that a licensing commission should be licensing guys at this age to go in the ring and take head shots
and have to suffer
the consequences. You know, 5, 10. I mean, they've taken enough headshots in their lives,
yeah.
man.
You bring up a great point.
You got to get past it.
I was actually worried about that too going into the fight because of what we just saw the fight before with Nate Robertson. I'm actually surprised the referee let that continue on after he looked stung, with two blows to the head, knowing that he was starting to fatigue, he was looking weaker in the match, and Jake Paul just kept, you know, finding more energy, and you know, ultimately. That was the end result. He ends up getting knocked out and going into the next fight with Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, who you just mentioned, in their 50s. That's the last thing you want to see, you know, is a guy take that risk and ultimately end up with that result. Luckily, we didn't see it last night. And who knows to say where it goes from here. I know Tyson loved it. He came out and said that he enjoyed it and was thinking about doing it again, but I don't know if I'm, like, even when this whole thing was announced, I didn't really get too excited about it because of what you just mentioned. Like, you know, you worry about what these guys have been through in their lives and their career and what they've done lately. And I know, you know, they spend months training for it, but boxing is a lifestyle, man. Once you give it up, it's tough to get back into it.
Yeah. Lou, you're getting up there. I mean, I know you're in pretty good shape. You're a bit of a pugilist when you played hockey. Your thoughts on the bout last night. I don't know if you followed it or if you got any thoughts about whether, you know, somebody at this stage of their lives should be exchanging head blows.
You know what? It was so exciting, I even forgot to watch it. I really didn't. I didn't care much for it. I'm not a big boxing fan. At least not now. With really no names out there. Growing up, there was probably a handful of names that everybody used to follow, and we followed them almost every single day. But again, you know, I played in a lot of alumni games, and I start to feel it. You know, the legs just aren't there. The reaction's just not there. And with us being on skates, if we react the wrong way, we could end up getting hurt because we can fall into the boards or we can break an ankle or being on the ice. I just couldn't understand how these guys would, at their age, get in a ring, and especially known as serious as Mike Tyson is, that he wouldn't have, it wouldn't have taken him 2 seconds to think of hitting Roy Jones with a
with a blow,
bite his ear off,
especially in the head.
Well, here's the scary part.
Just one of those things that I never would have imagined. I would have rather watched Jack Nicklaus or somebody else play 18 holes against the young stud than watching than these two guys throwing punches at each other.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this may not be the last one. If the financial results last night were pretty good, they're talking about keeping this going for a while. In one sense, I want to applaud these guys for getting into shape, and they both look pretty good for their age. But I don't know. I'm not convinced it's a great idea. Carlo, let's move on to the big topic in the hockey world. Are we going to have a hockey season? Bettman and the owners and the NHLPA are playing that scorched earth policy, Russian roulette. Bettman is the ultimate negotiator, but the players don't look like they want to back down just yet. They cut a deal back in July, and I think the owners want them to throw a little bit more back on the table. Carlo, what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know if you would consider or label Gary Bettman the ultimate negotiator, because I feel like this is the last thing that he's really wants to engage himself in. I mean, everything that I've heard, first of all, I truly believe that we are going to have hockey this year. It's just a matter of when. And, you know, I'm actually surprised that it's come to this at this juncture, considering that the NBA has found a way to come back and they're ready to start next week. To think that, you know, this whole shutdown or pause in sports started with the NBA leading the way, you know, with their Rudy Gobert positive test, they shut down the league and everybody followed. They decided to return to play and everybody followed. And now, you know, they're the leaders again to, you know, start their season. And I expect everybody else to follow, which is, you know, what the NBA or what the NHL should focus on, you know, doing as well, because you don't want to get too far behind with the league get started and lose your audience. But the NHL is different. The NHL can't operate in a season without fans, you know, like the NBA or the NFL can get by, because they just make so much money in other revenues. And I can understand the stance that the NHL is taking with the owners, saying that they want the players to concede more. But I also am on the side of the players, saying that one of the big reasons they agreed to come back in the bubble format was to have financial and long-term CBA security. And so that was agreed on, and it was agreed on in good faith. And everything that I know was that all the worst case scenarios were presented to the owners. So they were aware of, you know, what this season could possibly hold, and they still agreed to it. And I just find it bizarre and mind-boggling that they're taking this approach, you know, at this time in the world where, you know, we're going through a second wave, you know, people are still losing their jobs. Yeah, the revenues aren't where they at, but I think both parties have to be prepared to take a loss, and the players are already prepared to take a loss with 20% deferral and 10% deferral. And I think Gary right now is in a position where he probably realizes he agreed on a bad deal in the sense that, you know, the owners are going to lose more money than they anticipated. But, you know, and I think he's taking this stance too, where the longer he delays this, the more he's going to put more pressure on the players. And everything that I heard of the players is that they want to play. And they want to play and a play to the deal that was agreed on. I mean, in life, everybody grows up with the term that a deal is a deal. So I don't understand how you can go back on your word, or at least an agreement that has been both signed and sealed, you know, with the CBA. And, you know, it makes you think, like, if this was a deal that was agreed on and the players didn't like it, what would you think the owners would say if the players tried to reopen the CBA? They'd tell them to take a hike. So, you know, the players, you know, for the last two decades, the players have conceded billions of dollars in the CBA, and they've made the owners a lot of money. And don't get me wrong, the players have made a lot of money too. But, you know, the numbers that I'm hearing of you know, $300 million is the number that the owners are asking the players to forego or continue to defer or at least give back in this season. If you divide that by 30 teams, that's $10 million a team. Are they really going to sacrifice canceling the season over $10 million a team to, you know, to hurt the brand of hockey and to hurt the brand of the NHL? I can't see it happening. I think at the end of the day, Gary has a set number of games he wants to play. I have to believe it's 48 because that's the formula that's worked before. And, you know, whatever date he feels like he wants to start it is when it's going to start.
Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
Colonel, how would you react to the situation with the virus that hockey is going to start sooner than we think, people in the stands? Is the NHL better off waiting for that to restart the season so that we have people in the stands?
You know what? I always struggle with this answer because, to me, when I look at our world, we've been living through this for about 9 months right now. And I think we have to give ourselves credit because, you know, we've learned a lot and we've been given a lot of information on how to live with this thing around us, which includes professional athletes. And you see the leagues that are operating right now. We saw Major League Baseball go through some, you know, hiccups in the beginning, but they figured it out and they were able to finish the season. We see what the NFL is doing, where they have protocols in place. They're asking players to follow their protocols. And, you know, when you know, these positive tests comes up, they deal with it. So the thing that I struggle with is, in our world, we're still allowing businesses to stay open. We're still allowing people to go to work. We're still allowing people to congregate in public, in malls, at schools and stuff. So if we're being told and being allowed to be in these places where you're following protocols of social distancing, wearing masks, you know, and keeping your distance, I still don't understand why you can't have or allow fans into buildings at limited capacity doing the same things. Like, I'm not advocating that you fill these buildings up, but, you know, if an NHL rink has 20,000, why can't you have 5,000 people in those rinks properly socially distanced, wearing masks? I mean, we're seeing, you know, sports like college football, like NFL. I know they're outdoor stadiums and stuff, but they're finding a way to make it happen. And, you know, I would imagine that the NBA has, you know, set out precedents too, that they want to find ways to include fans following those same protocols. So I'm still trying to digest all this and understand why. I understand there's risk taken when you allow and present that to happen, but, you know, there should be a way that allows some fans to be in the stands. And if there's not, then you understand why the financial repercussions come from it. You know, hockey is, you know, a $5 billion industry, and a lot of it is generated through tickets that they sell. So when you don't have that, you know, you understand, you know, why, you know, the revenue isn't being met. So I listen, nothing's going to be perfect. Nothing's going to be 100% risk-free. Just like, you know, the NBA starting, they have to prepare for guys testing positive for these things. But ultimately, you know, what I give the NFL a lot of credit for is they have these protocols in place. They're following these protocols. They're handing out fines, but they're also finding a way to push through it, which is what I think our world needs to find a way to do, you know, obviously in the safest way possible, and what sports has to find a way to do in the safest way possible.
Yeah, talking about the NFL enforcing their rules, because the Denver Broncos didn't follow their rules, mm-hmm. They got to play without a quarterback today. So I'm actually kind of shocked that the NFL is going ahead with that game. But the Broncos have got no quarterbacks. They're going to have to bring in somebody who was probably a quarterback in college or something that's now a wide receiver. But they clearly, I think Goodell's response to it, they broke the rules. They have to pay the consequences. Exactly. They allowed their quarterbacks to not socially distance when one had been tested for COVID, and they're paying the price for that today. So,
and to be honest with you, I totally agree with the move because, listen, before the season started and before every season starts for any league, there's got to be a code of conduct that these players and everybody involved has to sign. We're basically saying, these are the rules you have to live by to play in this type of season. And if you can't play by them, either opt out or you're going to be penalized. And that's the approach that the NFL has taken right here. They have protocols in place. They have reminded teams on a weekly basis and even through conference calls that they have to continue to be diligent with these, safety hazards or protocols that they have to follow. And if they're not, they're going to pay the price for it. So in this case here, if you let the team off the hook because they weren't following the proper guidelines, what type of precedent or example are you setting? So, you know, teams went into the season knowing that, hey, listen, you know, we have to be flexible with our schedule, but we also have to understand that this is going to be a season of survival of the fittest. And if you're going to play by the rules, you're going to have the best chance of competing and best chance of having success for that. And if you don't, you're going to pay the price. And in this case, based on the information that's being leaked, you know, you had a quarterback that tested positive, but you had all four guys in a room that weren't properly socially distant and weren't even wearing a mask. So, how stupid do you have to be knowing that, you know, this is the potential that could possibly happen when you're being irresponsible? And now we're seeing, you know, the worst case of it happening. We're seeing an outbreak in Baltimore because we've had careless guys on that team, not follow the rules either. And, you know, I give credit to the NFL, you know, that they're obviously prioritizing health and safety, but they're also prioritizing that, hey, the onus is on the players, and the players have to be responsible if they want to continue playing the season and if they want to continue to get paid playing a season. So I credit them for pushing through here. The Denver Broncos are obviously left with a very unique scenario, but we've seen crazier things happen in sports. We saw an E-Bug goalie come in the NHL last year and win an NHL game with David Ayers. So, it would be crazy to think that they could possibly win a game with no quarterback.
Oh, you never know. You never know.
You always think that.
Go ahead, Luke.
No, I'm just listening to everything here, and it's more or less, you know, professional athletes are a different breed altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And they more or less, they beat to their own drum, so to speak. I'm just curious on how the National Hockey League is going to handle one or two positive tests, since they play every 3 or 4 days. The NFL football can more or less adjust their schedule because they play once a week. But how do you stack up 48 games when certain players start catching this virus, and then you start either postponing games, adding games at the end of the year, and then they're going to start complaining, well, we're playing 3 games in 4 nights, and we're playing two, like we're going from one place to another, and then we got the all-Canadian North American border that we've got to, that they have to cross. Obviously, you know, there's going to be ramifications there. We're going to have an all-Canadian conference or division compared to all American divisions.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, Lou, I'm curious to see how they're going to play this whole thing out too when it comes to dealing with positive tests. I think if there's a scenario that, you know, they could be encouraged about is the way baseball operated. I mean, baseball was worse because they played every day, right? And, you know, in the beginning, they, like I said, you know, they had a couple outbreaks with teams like the St. Louis Cardinals and the Miami Marlins. But after they got through that, they were able to push through, being able to limit the amount of positive tests that they were. So that's going to be an encouraging sign for the NHL. But, you know, at the end of the day, the NBA is going to be doing the same thing, playing their season, and they've actually laid out their protocols as of yesterday, saying that, you know, if any player gets it, they'll be isolated for 10 days or have to have 2 negative tests before they return. And, you know, you have to think that the NHL is going to follow the same protocol. I think the one thing that really impresses me is this whole contact tracing that the NFL has developed with a bracelet, how you have to wear your bracelet everywhere to it, because it determines, you know, who you've been in close contact with. I mean, I'm more interested to hear how that whole device works, and you know, maybe this is something that other leagues look into to help manage the scenario. But ultimately, the onus is going to be on the players. Again, it's going to be their acts and their responsibilities, at the rink and away from the rink. You know, that ultimately ends up determining the fate of, you know, how this whole season plays out.
We've been talking to Carlo Colaiacovo. Carlo, we've got to let you go. Before we let you go, our next interview right after the break is John Amendola. We're going to be talking about sports cards, the boom in sports cards. Got to ask you,
There must be a few Carlo Koliakovo hockey cards out there. Which one? Which one's your favorite one?
Man, there's a bunch of them. There's actually one of me in my World Junior tournament where I'm celebrating a goal with the fans in the background. It was an old one back in 2001 that somebody gave to me. And, you know, I know my parents have a box set at home, of all my cards in them. And it's funny you bring this up. Just as I got on the line with you guys, I was opening up, a pack of those new Tim Hortons hockey cards.
Yep.
That they have, you know, a box set was sent to me and I was opening up with my son. And the excitement in his face, you know, when we were opening them, there's three cards in each set. But the first set that I opened up, you guys will laugh. Connor McDavid,
wow.
Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon.
You hit the jackpot, my pack. Anyways, Carlo, just so you and Lou know, your rookie cards are roughly comparable in value. I checked it out this morning. Carlos, yeah. Yours might be worth just a touch more. It's got to be that Canadian Junior experience. But you guys
must
are pretty well equal in when it comes to sports cards value. On that note,
apparently the sports card business is booming again, which is great to hear.
Yeah, you should listen into our next interview after the break.
Hey, Carlo, my name's got a little bit longer than yours. Don't forget that, okay?
It probably costs more to make it. That's why it doesn't go for much.
You're probably right. That's why you don't see too many jerseys out there with my name on it.
Exactly.
Anyways, Carlo, we've got to let you go. Thanks again.
All right, guys,
you know,
thanks.
We
enjoy your day.
Every time we have you on, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Anytime.
Thanks. Carlo Koliakovo. Check him out Monday to Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. on TSN Radio. First up with Michael Landsberg. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville announced the Medium Gourmet Pizza Special. Get a Medium Gourmet Pizza for just $13.99. That's like flying first class when you only paid economy. You're up front, sipping champagne and stretching out in your luxuriously wide berth. Instead of having somebody kick the back of your seat, then the guy in front of you decides to recline his
Pizzaville,
seat,
stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying. Entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them every day. They've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Are you real ready? If you're a real estate agent, we can help you sell more homes. A business owner? We'll help show it off to the community at large. And if you're a homeowner, we'll supply accurate floor plans for every room in your home. Because selling property is all in the details. Real Tours Media, creators of 3D virtual tours, walkthrough video, HDR photography, logos, and brands. Check out the one-stop shop for successful real estate agents. RealToursMedia.ca. Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual with me, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Joining us today, a good friend of ours, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. And we're pleased to welcome back on the line now, John Amendola. John Amendola is the owner of MintInc.ca, a sports card and sports collectible enterprise. It's a crazy year in the sports card market. Things are going crazy. The hobby, the business at its peak level ever. Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
I'm great, boys. How are you guys today?
We're fantastic. I want you to settle this one for us.
I'm a little raspy, Wally. I was yelling till 3 in the morning, but I'm here.
We'll talk about that in a second. We'll explain to our listeners exactly why you're tired on Sunday mornings.
But you got to settle a bet
for us. Whose rookie card is more valuable, Lou Franceschetti or Carlo Colaiacovo?
Okay, well, you know, I grew up watching Lou, but yeah. Carlo's brother is a good buddy of mine. He does all of our Mint merch, and I told him I want to get that 2001 box of juniors and see if we can open it with Carlo. So, Lou, thanks for a great childhood memories, but I'm going to have to go with Carlo on this one because, you know, I have another motive.
Hey, don't worry about it. I've taken a lot of blows, so my shoulders are broad enough to take anything you got to give me.
I love it. I love that you're on here with these two guys this morning, too. What a great show this morning.
John, I sort of raised this. I'm just curious. Maradona, does he have
a
rookie
sticker
card?
Yeah, there's a sticker from 1978. Little Italian sticker, Argentinian, like the company. It's Colaiacovo. And the best condition you're going to find one is in and around an 8, which is near mint. It's about 30,000 right now. One sold yesterday for 30,000. They were about 12,000, I think, something like that in the spring. They've been going up already just before he passed away because the soccer card market has just been absolutely fire. I can tell you about a CR7 that we closed the night off with at 2 o'clock this morning. But since he passed away, obviously, his cards, you know, that's a huge trend in the space too. Like, you know, look at a guy like the Golden Bear, 82, right?
Where would you actually find golf rookie cards?
I've got eight.
Growing up, I don't really
currently
remember.
For sale right now, Wally, if you'd like to do one, we can do a transaction when the show's over.
Okay, well, I gotta have to call you.
You can get them. You just got to dig. You got to know the right people. But there is, you know, a card for everything. And anything before 1985, you know, you and I have talked a lot about this, how you have the Bobby Orr checklist and they're checked off, but you don't have the card. Anything pre-85 is got some serious value. The vintage market is very, very, very underpopulated. And, of course, they're not making more of it. But, yeah, you get into some of those. You know, you talk about Jack, you talk about Pelé, you talk about some of these greats, Bellavo, et cetera. Unbelievable. The last time I was on here, Naz was asking me about the Gretzky stuff. So, Naz, since then, I've had a client invest some money into Wayne Gretzky, and we're buying these Wayne Gretzky rookie cards, an 8 and a 7. You're talking about 17,000, 18,000
wow.
a card. The last time I was on, you asked me about them and the amount of transactions I've done since. So it's like fine art, but I'll give you an example why Gretzky's so popular. You guys were asking me about the Mint 10. So there's only two to exist. It's the hardest card in the last 50 years to grade. There's currently one on auction right now. I think it's sitting at around 750,000, and it closes in a couple of weeks. So it's going to set some major precedent. It's going to be, you know, the first hockey card, you know, at that level, the first GOAT card to really... So it's going to set the market. So you're seeing a lot of action in that space right now because it'll set everything below it. You're going from $1 million, $1.5 million. A 9 is 100,000, just to give you an idea of. So that's why you hear me talk a lot about it comparable to fine art, especially when we're talking about you hearing all these articles and radio stories now. You know, the Kardashian pulled a card that was worth, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that's what really. You know, there's a big investor community. There's a huge institutional presence in the space now, too. It's basically become like the stock market, like they did with shoes. It's a commodity. The market just dictates, you know, supply and demand at its finest.
John, I will ask you why you're tired on Sunday mornings, because you're working Saturday nights.
The hobby's changed since we all remember collecting cards when we were younger, when you were phoning Parkhurst because they stopped printing. So, what we have now is, you know, and especially given, the hobby's exploding. It didn't just happen now. We're hearing more about it now. But 2019 was actually Topps' biggest year, I think ever. So, you know, you have the oldest trading card company going, even coming off of, you know, the last 25 years, early 90s, early 70s, these cyclical cycles, like the last 2019 was lit for these guys. And now it's next level. So, and Panini, the little sticker card that nobody remembers from 25 years ago, is now the, you know, king of the sandbox. and they have the licensing rights to the most major sports. Topps has soccer and baseball. But what's happening now, Walter, is it's turned into an online environment in the sense of not shopping, not the shopping experience. I mean, we've been online for a long time now, but there's these live events where people are tuning in by droves, hundreds, sometimes thousands of people are tuning in, and we're doing things called breaks, where multiple people take part in an opening. So a box of cards these days, Wally, you and I have talked about it, it's not 50 cents or 35 cents or even $2 or $5 a pack. You're talking in the $50 to $100 a pack. You know, Carlos talking about Tim Hortons packs. I went through the drive-thru the other day and I ordered 50 packs and the lady was like, I said, that's 50 packs is the same price as, you know, one pack of soccer cards. So people tune in and they buy into these breaks and we're opening cards and you go into a draw and you're given certain teams and then you collect those. So imagine we're opening all these cards and we pull out a $2,000 Ja Morant autograph like we did last night and you have the Memphis Grizzlies. Or Thursday night's production, we pulled, it was not for our production, but also besides the breaks, what will happen, Wally, is people will buy boxes for you to open for them, which we call personals. So people have the mad rush and excitement of seeing their card open live in front of an audience, and there's lots of chatter and, you know, lots of back and forth and everything else. And then they get the cards a lot faster and quicker because shipping then becomes a lot different when it's an express letter and not a great big box. So that's what's really, really changed the industry. And then what they've also done is, you know, on the supply and demand side, on Thursday, we pulled a Lionel Messi 1 of 1. So the only card in the world of this specific card, it was a Topps 2020 Museum soccer product. And a good friend of ours, Anthony, pulled this card. And it's probably a $10,000 card already. It's a brand new card.
Well, Naz, I'll give you an opportunity.
John, how much does the value of cards go up after somebody passes away? So this is like Maradona.
So that's an interesting one. So you get a lot of people chasing after these goats. Like, you know, again, I don't want to take it out of context, but this is a big reason why I invested in Jack Nicklaus, right? I mean, again, he's 82. He's one of the greatest ever. I've opened about a case of Upper Deck 2001 Upper Deck Golf, and I can't hit Tiger Woods, so I just figured Jack's the next best bet. But yeah, no, Naz, it goes up quite a bit, especially given, you know, somebody like Maradona, although he wasn't expected to live, you know, at even that age. When you're talking about somebody that big, I mean, yeah, it definitely makes an impact. I'll find out the exact stat, and I'll let you know. I know you're a big stat guy. I don't have the percentage, but Naz, I'm going to say like double or more would be very, 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 very much just the norm these days. Even like a player makes the Hall of Fame and the card skyrockets, you know, LeBron set his record. So you remember when we were young, when we were collecting cards, once you get past your first or second year card, the value considerably dropped off. Nowadays, you got guys like LeBron James, 17th year Laker cards worth cash.
Lou?
You know what? It's a great business. I had a lot of hockey cards growing up. Where do we get a hold of, obviously right now, from what I'm reading in the newspaper, is that the NBA basketball players' cards are going through the roof. And if you get lucky where you get one guy who's going to sign one and you can keep it for years, where do you find this other than card shows?
So you're right, Lou. So the autograph cards versus like back in your day, you know, we'd stand in line and we'd get you to autograph a card and that was a big deal. Now what happens is you sign a sponsorship deal with Panini or Upper Deck or Topps, and they invite you over for a coffee and you sit there and you sign, it could be one card, it could be thousands of cards, and then they insert the cards into the packs. That's the chase. It's called the chase now. We're chasing the hits. So when you're buying these product, which I'll answer your question, where you're buying a retail product at places like Walmart and Target, and pretty much that's it. Again, not like it used to be where every convenience store, Walmart, Target, Toys R Us. And then there's hobby product, which is same product, a little bit more expensive, but it comes with guaranteed hits. And the hobby product is made exclusively for people like us at the local card store. So the local card shops exist in a bricks and mortar format. There's quite a few around town. It's obviously a large online presence as well. But the number one spot these days, Lou, besides Walmart, is in an online production. That's where people are going. And then, of course, eBay, you know, if you're into the singles and you're collecting for your personal collection or specific players. But the new wax, you know, and cracking new wax, like Carlos said, there's no better joy than when you open that pack of cards. And, you know, about 6 months ago, 9 months ago, about a year ago, I started doing some due diligence, end of Q3 of 2019. But in January, February, I mentioned it to a few people and they kind of looked at me like, and then in the spring, when we sort of soft launch, a couple people still said the same thing. And I said, you know, just wait 6 months, I guarantee you. So what's happening now is you're seeing it just, you know, I'm getting articles, whether it's ESPN or the Washington Post, you know, Wally sent me something the other day from Sportsnet and I got something the other day from the Globe. Like, you know, for anybody that's, I'm going to say 30, 35 and over up until into their 70s. Like, I mean, you remember pre-cell phone, like, I mean, from 10 to 16, 17, like cards were my life. So, it's really awesome to see it come back, and it's really awesome to see how it's changed. And that's what we're doing. We're not trying to sell cards, you know, so to speak. We're not selling the cards, a pack of cards to make money. What we're trying to do is, yeah, we have to eat, and the production is, you know, cost money to put on, but it's about the community, the way that it's being embraced, the way it's bringing people together. And I think especially during this pandemic, it's really giving people something that's relatable, something that they can kind of talk to. And again, from an investment point of view, like last night alone, Wally and Naz, and Lou, I forgot Lou's there. We pulled, three cards last night alone worth over $2,000. So again, you're opening a box of cards that's $500, $1,000, but you're, you know, if you hit, you hit, so to speak.
John, we're talking to John Amendola. John, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so I'm gonna let you, promo yourself just a little bit before we let you go. Our listeners have got, they've got that Bobby Orr rookie card. Maybe they got a few Jean Beliveaux, maybe a Dave Keon, a Frank Mahovlich, a Phil Esposito, you know, a Guy Lapointe, a Boreas Salming, a Rick Vibe, somewhere in their attic.
Even a few Lou Franceschetti's too.
Or a Lou Franceschetti or a Carlo Colaiacovo.
There you go.
Mint Inc. How do they, you're not just selling cards, you're buying this product.
Yeah, we're buying, we're doing consignments, we're doing some exclusive, like I told you about the Gretzky stuff, we have some high-end Jordan, customers, and then old school, we have a showroom, you can come in, you can buy a pack of cards, you can buy a box of cards, you can buy a case of cards, you can find us online, and then the best place to watch the action is Thursday and Saturday nights, we have breaks after dark. We go on live around 8 o'clock and there's, you know, we'll go till 2, 3, 4 a.m. And it's awesome, Wally. I mean, you've tuned in. We have a group and it's growing every week. And a lot of these people will tune in for hours. So, John, and not just men, Wally. We have ladies that get in on the action, and we're not just opening basketball and hockey, UFC cards, soccer cards, basketball cards, baseball cards, every kind of card.
Mint Inc. MINTINK.ca. Check it out. If they want to watch Breaks After Dark, how do they, Instagram,
Mint,
YouTube,
yeah,
how do you
10,
do it?
So Mint Inc. 10 is the handle. Obviously Mint Inc. is the reference is Mint is the top grading. Ink is obviously the ink on the cards. And then we needed a number to go in there and 10 is the ultimate grade. So we're Gem Mint, baby. Mint Inc. 10. Where we stream on all platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, and Instagram, full production. You can sit back on your couch on your big screen and you can watch us pull fire all night. And the show, if we were on the radio, there'd be a lot of bleeps. So it's not PG. I swear a lot. It's really, I'm on here. It's easy. I keep telling myself, but it's,
how you
do it? On the internet, there's no holds barred, baby.
Okay. We'll let you go, John. John Amendola, mintink.ca.
Thanks again. And
you got
Lou, an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
You got cards.
Thank you. You too.
Take care, guys.
Naz and Lou, really quickly, college football playoffs are coming up. Notre Dame's number two, Alabama's number one, Clemson's number three, Ohio State's number four. How's it going to shake up between now and the end?
I think there's going to be Notre Dame and Alabama in the final.
Oh man, that would really be something, Lou.
If that happens, we'd have to watch it together, Wally. But I think the two games that are going to dictate everything is going to be Alabama, Florida,
and the next Clemson and Notre Dame game will dictate where they fall. And don't be surprised if there's another COVID attack with Ohio State that they might not even make the Final Four.
Well, the interesting part is seven games, quite a few games got either postponed or canceled in college football yesterday, seven of them. So, you know, quite a few of the teams have already had outbreaks. So that is the wild card in all of it. Certainly Alabama, Notre Dame in the college football final would be incredible. This seems to be the best Notre Dame team in a long, long time. They may actually give Alabama a game this year. Anyways, on that note, hopefully we see that happen. We're way past our 10 o'clock expiry time. Got to go. To all our listeners, stay safe. Be well. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. Thank you so much for listening in.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.